for listening to the One Up Network. Welcome to the One Up Yours podcast for Friday, September the 1st. I'm Garnet Lee. Have the foursome back together. Luke, here in the studio.
Yeah, I'm allowed to be at Ziff again like last week. But awesome. It's bittersweet because while there are four, we again have a guest producer.
I know, but Scott,
we all miss Skip.
Scott did a really good job for us last week.
Last week sounded great.
Skip who?
Dude, that was cool.
Wait, he's not going to like that.
Your roommate, remember him?
The guy that you let live in the closet sized room at your house.
That guy. That's Shane, of course.
We love them both. Special guest.
No, stick your special guest somewhere else. That's Shane. Just Shane.
Featured player.
No, just plain Shane.
All right.
And John.
Hello.
So we got a great show for you today. We're in the first section. We have an excellent Whatcha Been Playin', punctuated by a little special treat where we all have seen Rockstar's Bully. We can give you some impressions from having played the game and of what's coming up with that. And of course, we got some community stuff for where John has been on the boards. Second section, we're going to do, because you guys enjoyed it so much last time, we're going to go through the rundown again. 3 minutes, several subjects, as many as we can get through before we come back to the third section, which will be news.
Squeeze as many inches of that in there as we can.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So light it in.
I think we have about 7 or 8 here, right?
Yeah,
nice. We have several good ones. Several of them lifted between.
Oh boy. I see what you did there, Shane. Garnet glossed over it.
Yeah, I'm cruising.
He doesn't
right
have
past
dick on
one.
The brain today.
Next. So speaking of Bully. Huh? Notice, see how I did that? See, I can do that.
I don't get it.
I can play with that too. Speaking of Bully, since we teased that, let's talk about Bully. We saw it. Luke and I saw it this morning over at Rockstar's office here. You guys saw it yesterday, right?
Yep.
So it takes the, obviously using the Grand Theft Engine, right?
It looks better, though.
Yeah, it looks
It looks a lot better than Grand Theft.
But I will say the loading times and frame rate weren't quite what I expected, but it is more detailed.
They said to us the loading times were totally not optimized, too.
But for a PS2 game, I think it's pretty impressive.
It looks good, and it's very detailed.
So who thought they wanted to ever be, like, a kid at a private school?
Well, the whole thing, I didn't know a whole lot about it. They haven't really shown much, and I came into it not knowing what to expect, and I was really surprised because I found the whole world and the characters is really enchanting. Like, I didn't know I wanted to play this game. Like, I never thought of, I want to play in a boarding school, but they did such a good job of creating the world, all the subtleties and the writing, and I found it really interesting, actually. I was surprised.
If you hadn't heard about it, you're probably not the only person. So tell everyone out there, what is the basic deal with Bully?
Well, yeah, you're this bad kid who gets shipped off to the school where is it located?
Like New England.
Connecticut or something.
In the New England area.
And there's all these different factions there. And it kind of feels like an 80s movie, like a John Hughes movie set in a boarding school. So there's lots of mischief, and it's just wild and funny. And
it's got
weird.
A lot of influences from school-based movies, like from the 80s, but even from like the 60s and 70s and before. I mean, like there was a series of movies in the UK called Centrinians, which was about sort of kids getting up to no good at school. There used to be a show on TV in the UK called Grange Hill, which a lot of the team on Bully grew up with, and it was, you know, all the different sort of archetypes in a school that you know that people remember, and right. Bully has all of them.
Yeah, like the lunch lady and the nerds, and everything you would expect is there.
And it's nerds and jocks and bullies and greasers and
I really like
preppies.
I really like the five faction systems
and the idea that you have to, that you're not affiliated to any group. There's all these sort of predetermined factions within the school, and you're dropped in as the new kid, and you're a bit of a badass, but you're sort of looking to ally yourself with people, and you and the path through the, it's more of a role-playing game even than GTA was. It's got a lot of taking GTA and RPG mechanics and applying them to a completely unexpected sort of scene. Right. I think works really well.
And the combat seems really simple at first. I think people would be like, there's nothing going on. But you unlock moves as you progress. So just like, playing it for a second, you might think, there's not much here. But it actually, there's a lot more.
I think the combat is where it's going to draw the fire. Mm. Because it's not just sort of schoolyard fisticuffs. There are places where you are beating people with a bat and stuff like that.
But nobody dies.
Nobody dies. But I think that it's Rockstar. People are going to be gunning for it. And I think the violence, the sort of like, grabbing a baseball bat and hitting a kid with it.
But you're also giving people like Indian burns and wedgies.
Right. And I think if it had just been that, then maybe it wouldn't have drawn any fire, even with the fist fights.
They're going for a teen, and I think they're good at it. I mean, because it doesn't take it too far. There's no blood. There's no guns. You know.
And that's just it. Isn't that what's going to kind of maybe be its downfall? Because you go into a Rockstar game, especially with their history, like the Warriors, Grand Theft, and here's Bully, and you're going to be expecting.
See, I don't think so because
you don't think so.
This game is being aimed more at a younger audience. I think people around like 13 are going to love it because it's you know it's them in this world.
And the humor is appropriate, yeah, it's you know, fart jokes.
But
and
all of us, I mean, we've all been to school. We know what this is like, and we can play it kind of in a nostalgic way and be like, oh, yeah, this reminds me of my experience.
I think it's very clever, and I also think it's an interesting insight into what's going through Sam Houser's head right now because he's the executive producer on it. And I mean, it's which Rockstar studio? It's the one up in Canada.
It's the first game, but Geronimo, who was the producer on The Warriors, he's working on it as well.
But Sam is sort of steering it on the creative side as well. And I think what we're seeing with character interaction is perhaps a hint as to what we'll see with the next GTA, because there's the faction system, which is a bit like the gangs in GTA, but then there's a more intimate version of it in Bully, which is. You can sort of ingratiate yourself to individuals within a faction, and it will change the path through the faction story. So, well, like, really, if you start dating a nerd girl, like, it will affect the nerd path.
The greaser girls were way hotter than the nerd girls.
Yeah.
of course, right?
I heard that they're easier, too. I mean, yeah. In real life, at least.
But, yeah, I found the whole thing just kind of charming. I was surprised. I was charmed.
It is. And I like there's sort of a morality to it, which hasn't been quite so pronounced. I mean, there's always been morality to Rockstar games, but it gets overlooked. But in this, there really is. You do need to make the decision on how you handle the bullies and how you handle
and every
the geeks.
Person you interact with, you can either like say a nice thing or a bad thing, and you can like apologize instead of fight. Yeah, there's a lot of options, a lot of freedom.
They're definitely into this whole immersion thing. And so what did you think about the whole... If you're going to get punished, you might have to spend 5 minutes, like five real minutes,
the real
doing
life
something
punishment.
Shit.
Like you have to mow the lawn for 5 minutes.
Mow the lawn,
which
or
would
clean
involve,
things.
Did
or...
you already said it would involve moving the right stick forward and backwards for 5 minutes?
It's going to be like actual boring gameplay.
Yeah, you know
on
what?
Purpose.
Nice idea. I'm not down with that.
But I mean, I like guess the argument is, well, you know, then don't do the thing that leads
right.
to that.
Right, but I mean, come on, that's like part of the freedom of games. You want to be mischievous. You want to be a fuck sometimes, right?
Well, then you have
and
to mow the lawn.
Sometimes you got to mow that lawn.
Yeah.
But you know what? The game also, it's coming out October 17th, PS2 exclusive, and it just reminded me of how many good exclusive PS2 games are out this fall. Like that.
All right, I think we have to go on.
they're a bunch, though. A lot of good games.
Like the one on your cover.
I saw where
you're going with that.
Guitar Hero 2.
Hey, what do you think of the new song list now?
We're talking about it later in the episode.
We are?
Yes,
it's on that sheet of paper you gave us that we're talking about later.
No comment.
It is?
Yes.
Yeah. I wrote that list.
Stick to the schedule, man.
All right. Oh, well, okay, God. So what else have you been playing then, Shane? Shit, if you're not going to talk about Guitar Hero.
Well,
right now.
I'm playing a bunch of games for review, a lot of RPGs. I'm doing Final Fantasy XII and Baten Kaito's Origins for GameCube.
So I've been playing Final Fantasy XII, too. They did a demo in the office on Monday that we both sat in on that we have a like preview and some video going up tomorrow. What do you think?
You know, I've been kind of questioning it the whole time because they changed it so much, and I think it is good, and I'm excited to play through it, but it is still very daunting and different, and it's really complex world. And
it's really different.
Yeah, it's really different.
Sorry, I yawned there. I hope no one could hear that. It's just we were talking about role-playing games.
Dude, you don't like games anyway, so just like games sit over there, newsboy.
Yeah.
And what do you think about, like, how... So they showed us, like... characters later on in the game where they're really leveled up and they have all of their gambits. They have like 12 stages where the gambits.
That's really cool. And it showed me like the final outcome of this gambit thing where basically you...
The X-Men?
No.
That's what I said too.
Kinetic card.
No, the way it works is like your other party members, you can like...
And your own.
You set up like these if this then that like set of matrices where if they get attacked by this person, they'll do this. Or if they lose their hit points, they'll heal this person. And you have to unlock all those. So that by the end of the game, you basically program the AI for all your characters to play the game themselves.
Right. And so you almost didn't have to play the combat, which I think people who like really are in, I think there's a faction of Final Fantasy players are going to look at that and go, what the hell is this?
I have a question for you both, because I haven't really attacked a Final Fantasy game. I played 10 a bit, but the last one I really played all the way through was probably 7.
Right.
I'm not getting the sense that sort of like crazy anticipation for a Final Fantasy is now.
It's their own fault for announcing not only 13, but 13 and Versus 13 before this came out.
So you think they've just diluted it?
Well, yeah, it's somewhat like them showing a trailer for Spider-Man 4 right now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like you look past what's coming really quickly on a current.
But I mean, I can remember a few years ago. I mean, it was like everything to do with Final Fantasy was guaranteed to. It was going to sell like crazy. Yeah. It was all anyone was going to talk about for a while.
This game was delayed over a year. Had it come out last fall, I think people would have been reacting to it slightly differently.
Do you think the character design is as magnetic as some of the other characters?
It's different, you know.
That's a way of saying no.
But they've changed. I mean, it's never been consistent.
Well, right. No, I'm saying, but I think this group of characters doesn't have that magnetic squall.
I think they look a little too similar. Everyone's kind of blonde and European
looking.
What
was the last Final Fantasy character that you really remember?
Oh, 10 and 10-2. 10-2 with the hot sluts and 10-2.
That was true.
In various states of undress.
I don't remember the names of any of them. There was the goth one.
She
again,
was hot.
Greaser chicks, hot.
Lulu, hot. Pain, hot.
It was very hot. They'll do things some other women won't.
But, yeah. I mean, 12 is it's a good game, and it's going to make a big impact, but, you know, we're already looking past it a little bit.
It's a great game. It's really cool. It's really strange, though, to have a Final Fantasy 12 where, like, the mystical, magical, Earth Force magic stuff isn't the focus. It's very, very political intrigue.
Well, the guy who made this game, he was the guy who made Tactics, Final Fantasy Tactics, and Vagrant Story, and those games are incomprehensibly complex, and my fear this whole time is that by the end of the game I won't know what the fuck is going on.
I think you'll know what's going on, but I think it's really complex.
Yeah.
And you can tell that they cribbed a lot off of, like...
Luke is actually falling asleep.
Yeah, so that's enough Final Fantasy.
It's a franchise that's relevant still. Oh, wait, no, it's not.
Oh, you're so wrong,
because the bottom line is that Shane and I are both totally freaking digging on it.
So will 2 million other people.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. What have you played instead?
I played Encyclopedia Brown on my DS.
And besides,
it was Phoenix Wright. Same game. I played it while I was on my way to Germany, and I played Lumines, and I almost in the airport coming back after being in Leipzig for a week, I almost threw my PSP. There's a bunch of like media people sitting around and like developers from I think they were Starbreeze guys. I'm sitting there playing Lumines, having like a career game, just. Career, and I get to this particular board where it's like the background is gray, the fucking blocks are gray, and the other blocks are white. So the gray blocks and the gray black background, to my colorblind ass, are the same thing. And all of a sudden, it unravels, and I swear to God, I can't believe I was allowed on the plane. I thought I was gonna lose it. I was furious.
Luke, tell our listeners more about this exciting new game called Lumines.
Yeah, well...
Oh, wait, it's old and boring and shitty. Moving on.
Oh, wait, what else does the PSP have?
Oh, nothing.
Yeah.
And Lumines isn't shitty, but Lumines 2 is way better. So, there you go.
I'd say there were enough hours put in Lumines around this office when it came out that's definitely not a shitty game.
Lumines 2 improves greatly on...
I just hope the colors are fair. That's all I care about.
No gray on gray.
Please, just, like, very bright... Very dark, and I can do it.
John, I'd ask what you've been playing, but it's more like what you've been driving, right?
NASCAR. Oh, actually, no. NASCAR. I've had to. NASCAR's out next week, I think. So I've been playing that. And I also had the pleasure of the Fast and Furious game.
Oh, dear.
Tokyo Drift.
I don't even know if it's called that anymore.
No, it's just the Fast and the Furious.
It's just the Fast and the Furious.
Was it awesome?
Oh, yeah. but for pleasure, or, you know, on my own time, I've been playing a lot of Grand Theft Saints Row.
Oh. Hi, THQ. Thanks for tuning in. This is one of yours.
It's very, I mean, I like
it's
it.
It's very competent.
It's very, very competent. And I know, I mean, just from looking at people on live, it's all anyone with a 360 is playing right now. The same as we always say on the 360 is everyone goes from game to game to game as together as a group.
Not a lot of your friends on Bomberman X-Zero right now, no?
Don't appear to be, no.
No.
Everyone's playing Saints Row or Texas Hold'em. I'm enjoying it, and I'm playing through it, but it's a bit soulless.
Character-based soulless or just story and world-based soulless?
Oh, the world is fantastic, but the humor isn't as sort of... effortless as it is in the GTA game. I mean, I love San Andreas. It's one of my favorite games. And
so it feels a little forced, the humor?
It all feels a little forced, and it's all a little like, look, we got Tia Carrera to play hooker. You know?
Isn't
that clever? Get it? Yeah? She's a porn star.
She's not acting.
She's not acting. She really is doing that.
What do you think about the scores? Because remember when we went to that event, like, what was that, about a month ago for the multiplayer event? And we're all riding home in the cab. So we're riding home in the cab. We're all talking about the game. We're like, you know what? The game was better than we thought it would be. We were speculating on scores. The scores wound up even higher. Yeah. Greg Ford.
Well, you know, the EGM scores are out now, and it got an 8, an 8, and a 7. And those are really good scores.
Those are really good scores.
Yeah, it's better than most GTA clones get, definitely.
That's spot on. I've, like, from what I've, I mean, I've only played 3 or 4 hours, but it looks to me like a sort of 7.5 kind of game, which is, there you go.
And the people online who are defending this as, like, as good as GTA are saying that we undervalue the multiplayer, but I don't think so, you know.
The multiplayer is fun.
It's fun.
But it's not...
There's not enough of it in co-op mode, for one thing.
Right, there's only, was it, 2 missions in co-op?
Yeah.
And it's not really imaginative. It's just like, you know, they put multiplayer in there because they could. I mean, I was kind of expecting what 25 to life should have been, and it's not even that, you know? I mean, it's this team-based...
It felt from when we played it.
Bling collection, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That mode's kind of cool, actually. The one where you're running around collecting the necklaces, and then you have to, like, you know, decide, okay, how many more do I want to go for before I try and go and turn them back in? Apparently, there's also problems with the online that Volition is working on. I was reading a post off their website that they're working hard on a live update for the game, but they don't have a timetable for that yet.
But in the absence of a real GTA right now, it's the most competent knockoff of GTA I've seen.
I think it's going to be incredibly successful.
Oh, yeah. Well, they did 500,000 downloads of the demo.
Right.
And when EA said that they had a 40% conversion rate on Fight Night 3. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're on track to being, very quickly, being one of the biggest games on 360.
And, I'm going to give THQ some credit, because this game was originally supposed to come out, like, last fall. And they, you know, they pushed it back, they waited until it was done, and it probably wouldn't have been an 8 had they released it last fall. Right. And they actually made it a good game, so...
The graphics are very nice. I think the city is good. And I think they've made a lot of technical improvements. They've looked at... They sort of deconstructed GTA and pieced it back together in a slightly different way. The mission structure is slightly different. But it doesn't have that sort of effortless... I'm just in this world and I can do whatever I want and I can sort of stumble into the story points the way GTA does. There are now you are doing the gameplay bits and now you are doing the story bits.
And everyone just kind of agrees it doesn't have the hook of a GTA. Like, you know, this is the intangible greatness.
It's all a bit sort of contrived gang kind of thuggy.
Does it have like the born in a meeting, like a marketing meeting feel to it at all or no?
Yeah. I mean, it was like, let's do GTA.
Yeah, exactly. So...
And well, it's good enough that I definitely want to play it ever. After having played multiplayer and listening to you guys talk about it, I'm actually anxious to play it.
I mean, until, I don't know what the next 360 game I'm going to play is, but I would imagine for the time being, it's going to be the one that I turn on every night and play for an hour. And it's structured nicely and that the missions aren't terribly convoluted and you can, you know, you can pick it up and do... I mean, like I said, it's got a lot of the things that made GTA great. I mean, they've done that.
But what's funny is, it seems, especially with Xbox 360 games, you're not allowed to just like an Xbox 360 game. You have to, like, love the Xbox 360
game. I did notice
the
responses to the scores, and I saw two discussions on different forums. One of them was complaining about the 7 out of 10 that Sharky gave it, saying that clearly he had, you know, he had it out for THQ or whatever. And then I saw another discussion about the 8.5 that IGN gave it being, like, just, you know, heinously too much.
Which I'll let you get it. There's a very small window right there of accurate score.
It is an 8.23,
which is close to the GameSpot score of 8.3.
Nice. I suppose I should interject. Should I say anything about Enchanted Arms? I mean, I know I don't want to bore you with any more role-playing stuff.
Go ahead. Put your...
I mean,
your
it was out this week.
Fairy RPG stuff.
That is out this week, and yeah.
It's the weirdest thing in the world to find a Japanese role-playing game on the 360. It's like, what, the three people in Japan, of them, if one of them buys it.
I haven't seen it running at all, but everything I've heard about it says that it doesn't look much better than a PS2 game.
Oh, no, it looks like a PS2 game.
It looks like an Atlas. It looks like one of those quirky Atlas games that you get on PS2 that's really cool, like, for the fans, and works as a PS2 game. And as a 360 game, you're like, why is this on this machine again?
Who put it? It's Ubisoft put it
It's
out,
Ubisoft,
right?
From Software Development.
Yeah, From did it.
But, yeah, it's really... Not, you know, it's a very average game. Incredibly average.
You know what's cool about it is the combat system. The combat system is, it's simple, but it's kind of cool. The whole grid, it's almost like, you know, it has that sort of pseudo chess-like vibe to it. I don't get the whole reason that they did an online version so you could battle whatever. It's kind of strange.
That's one maybe that if people are playing it, that post some stuff on the boards and talk about it, you know?
I think that if they do, they'll say, well, we like the combat system because that's cool and strategic. We like the being able to put golems together, but the presentation is, like,
I would say it's a From Software launch RPG. It's like an Evergrace or a Eternal Ring. It's, you know, it's like a proficient RPG that exists and no one's really going to love it ever. Like, no one's going to be like in love with Giant Arms ever.
So, I think someone will.
I'm
sure that they'll make sure to point it out this week.
What else have you found pointed out on the boards this week?
There was some criticism of our fascination with beige's threads, so we're not going to mention beige.
Who?
I think you just did.
Except those two times and this one more time where there was some talk about us talking about Beige a lot and Indy quite a bit, and yeah. Indy responded with, "Beige is the intellectual, and I'm the blue collar guy."
Okay. Shout out to Indy.
You can't self name yourself.
What's going on out there? What's going on out there? A lot of discussion on news with opinions.
Yes,
Luke.
I know. I love that.
Quit having them.
Saint Genesius says that he likes it, but has noticed that others don't so much. And in a different thread, Mudron said that journalism can only be as good as the audience, and hopes that gamers have matured enough to be able to like see the opinion and be able to respond to it.
It's nice to want things.
I think I've read the thread, and there's a lot, like the guy that you mentioned, Mudron or whatever, has had some pretty good insights and criticisms, and other people have too. As far as, you know, I think it's a perfectly reasonable and you know, valid complaint to only want a very sort of like just the facts. Mm-hmm. All gets, well, and if that's what you want, then I mean, I really, you know, you should probably just try and get on some PR mailing lists, because mm-hmm. you can.
Some people seem to be railing against the blog culture of news, saying that they don't like all the sass in news.
Well, I think sometimes it gets a little bit excessive, and I think that's one of the things I wrote a long post in there about trying to find a balance between it, and it is difficult to find that balance. And yeah. I think when you have, you know, new writers like Mark and Susan and, you know, Dharma, and, you know, even Klepek is young still, there are still times where, you know, I have to be more conscious of, like, you know, reeling them in. And a couple of the complaints against Mark, you know, were probably things that I could have definitely softened. But at the same time, like, you know, there's no such thing really as objectivity. Oof. Well, one of the things that I said on the message board that I would really like to have in, like, a future version of news.1up.com is a section just called Shilling. And it'll be in the lower left corner of the page, and it'll just be reprints of the day's PR, so you can just click there. You can just have straight PR releases in one part
like
of that.
Like a wire service?
And yeah, you know what? That's cool. That's like a wire service.
And you could even subscribe to that if that's all you want, but I think that the numbers would show that that's not ultimately what people want, despite the fact that some people bitch about it.
Lord Zod wonders, he picked up on something that, who was it that said this? Someone said recently that the biggest problem with being a Nintendo publisher was that you were up against Nintendo itself.
It was the president of Namco in Japan.
Yeah. And he actually wonders if perhaps third-party support for Nintendo would improve if Nintendo made less games, which actually sparked quite a conversation on the
board. Less games?
If Nintendo themselves
published games. Right, that would kind of be an effort. How many games do they make right now?
They make a ton of games for DS.
Oh, boy, got it. Here we go.
Metric ton, more than any other first party. Boy. But it is changing. Like, third party.
Shane, when was last time? Okay, just out of curiosity. When was the last time they introduced a relevant new character?
When's the last time Nintendo introduced a relevant new character?
Because very many of their games are character-driven.
Dr. Kawashima in Brain Training.
Didn't you play Battalion Wars? That shit's hot.
Like...
I'm kidding.
Anything you hear to say about Nintendo first party is wrong, aren't it? Like, seriously. I'm not even going to have this discussion with you.
Wow. All right. Well, so there you go. Anything I have to say about Nintendo is wrong. Good thing I was going to say that the Wii is going to be a big success.
Oh. We're all belligerent and grouchy today.
Yeah, sorry.
Two more things. Mabul says he can't afford...
I thought you said my balls.
My balls say that the winning combination for this year and perhaps next is a PS2 and a Wii.
That's a winning combination.
What did that back up with?
I think it was, the new consoles are expensive and there's a lot of people. I think if you want a new experience, then the Wii is the best bet. And that we're going to... I think everyone is starting to see that we are probably going to get... good continued support for PS2. Well,
How long do you think PS2 support will last?
2 or 3 years.
Will it be like Nintendo DS?
What do you mean?
Like Nintendo GBA.
You're saying something about Nintendo.
DS came out, but I was thinking
very
like
foggy,
Game Boy.
Confused.
Yeah, like
Game Boy Advance. There are still. I mean, you came and bought. Is GBA hardware still in production?
Oh yeah, it's huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
What's that little tiny like unusable one that they did?
Right, but the micro is. But is the standard just the SP open up?
It sells like crazy.
Okay.
I forgot your question.
Will how long will PS2 support? Will it like do? I mean, we've seen in handhelds where it's happened.
They're trying to make it last 2 or 3 more years. We'll see.
Early next year, we've got
God of War 2.
God of War 2, Rogue Galaxy.
Yeah, there's more stuff on the horizon than that.
And how quickly will it turn from top quality titles to like second tier and $20
titles?
I think
within 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last one, which is actually sort of seems to be sparking a lot of debate. A Master Ninja argues that the best games right now are Japanese games developed for a Western audience.
he likes Dead Rising.
He also cites Resident Evil 4, Ninja Gaiden, and Lost Planet in that list.
I mean, Ninja Gaiden, and I can see that, but they were developed more for a worldwide audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that it's more a matter of just those developers looking at the broader spectrum and learning from what's being done in other territories.
Right, but I think, you know, everyone does that. Sony, Nintendo, everybody does that stuff. So
yeah, I mean, it wasn't a San Diego team looking at things that are done in the East when they were doing God of War.
Right.
So, you know, it's back and forth. It's just it's just a bigger sense of global community. Mm-hmm. Right?
How harmonious.
How harmonious.
Mount.
All right. So we'll be back in a minute with our big rundown of as many of these questions from the boards and from ourselves as we can get through. And we'll talk to you then.
You're listening to One Up Yours on the One Up Radio Network.
Kids, podcasts are here. You've been hearing about podcasts? You like podcasts? You've been reading about podcasts? Well, we got a podcast. Jeff, don't we got a podcast?
We do have a podcast.
CGW Radio.
CGWRadio.oneup.com.
What's that? One of those URL things?
Podcast.oneup.com.
Whoa.
You could also get it at iTunes Music Store.
Wow.
Holy cow.
Can't get enough of DL.TV? Then download our podcast. Just go to DL.TV and click on the audio link.
Turning them loose.
You'll be able to listen to Patrick, Robert, and the rest of the gang over and over and over again.
Remember to keep the ear canal clean and don't share if you don't want to risk spreading disease.
Here comes the rundown. We're starting off with some handheld stuff, which seems like a natural progress from what we were just talking about. First up, the DS. This is from Shane. DS totally owns Japan. All 10 of the top 10 weekly sales, plus Final Fantasy III sells out, and the DS is selling still at an unbelievable pace.
Right. So this week, all top 10 games, all of them are DS. That's all format. Like no PSP, no PS2, no nothing. All DS. And DS is up to 10.4 million sold in just Japan. That is more than three times what PSP has sold. And DS is just unstoppable
there.
So
is this, I mean, is this a sort of observation on the indifference of the Japanese market to everything else? Or is it
the domination? It's all anybody's playing. You think video games in Japan, you think DS. That's it. And, like, what does this mean for Wii? I think Wii is going to have the, you know, instantly 10 million people who want to buy Wii.
See, I totally disagree because, not totally disagree, but I disagree because of the fact that DS is a handheld platform, Wii is a home platform. Until they can prove that they can build that bridge, then they're selling to a different sensibility, right?
But already Nintendo is proving that they, you know, it that the handheld space, they just own it.
They
don't necessarily need Wii to do 10 million.
Yeah, in fact,
like, it's just going to dominate.
In fact, the DS is bigger than Game Boy, even faster and bigger and more dominant than Game Boy was ever. It's crazy.
So I guess this means that the stories of the being another Game Boy, like, at some point have gone. DS is it.
I bet the plan for next Game Boy was completely scrapped, and now they're planning a new DS.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
It's unreal because that's so funny because, you know, just a few months ago when we were thinking, oh, the DS, we'll see how it works out. Yeah, I guess we saw how it works out.
Yeah, well, the thing, and what I guess what is going to be most interesting as far as what Nintendo's going to be up to is a year from now when we're looking at the Wii and, you know, we've all sort of except for Shane, who loves Nintendo totally, taking shots at the Wii, just like you would have the shots that you would have taken at the DS when it first came out.
We all thought it would fail.
Yeah,
all of us.
Yeah, exactly. And now in a year, are we going to be having the same discussion when we see, you know, better Wii software in the channel? Because admittedly, like, what they're going to launch with is not good. But once people start to figure out how to do it, are we going to be saying the same thing about the Wii in a year or 2 years?
Well, we won't, because there'll be a lot of people who said, "See, I told you so," because I figured it out off the DS and I knew the Wii was going
to
work.
Right. And the next step is this DS ownership going to come to America? Is DS going to kill PSP here? I mean, it seems like it might happen. It could happen.
What would it take as far as software, though, for the DS to take off?
More third-party games here.
And we've already said it's so hard to compete against Nintendo.
It is. But
it's interesting, the stuff that's been doing well in Japan, I mean, Brain Training is not doing as well here as they thought.
But it's doing really well. It really is. And in Europe, it's huge.
Why do you think it's not doing as well here?
Well, I'd heard that it hadn't cracked a million yet, right?
Well, it's not here. 500,000.
Right. Which
It's definitely not taking off. Like, I mean, yeah. It's a phenomenon in Japan. The book was a phenomenon in Japan, too, so it's more likely to succeed there.
Yeah.
So what is it about Westerners that don't want to do it?
Well, it's hard to sell. It's, you know, the DS stuff's very weird, and it's slowly taking over here, but it's definitely not taking over like it is in Japan.
Yeah.
So how is it going to take over here then, Shane? Because you were saying it was going to, right?
Next!
I'll tell you that next
time.
There
you go. That's all right, one for the boards.
All right, so if that's the case about DS, where does that leave PSP? The new bundle coming next month with a gig stick and the ATV Off-Road plus Lords of Dogtown, $250. Is that too little, too late?
Yes.
Yeah. Do we really need the full 3 minutes on
No,
that?
I don't think we need the full 3 minutes.
Is it game over for PSP? Are people going to buy this? Do you think this is going to push PSPs this Christmas?
Not with that package.
You get a gig memory stick, though.
Don't care.
And ATV was a successful pack-in for PS2 for many years.
Well, look, let me go ahead and roll the next, because the next one was PSP 2, so we'll just roll this in at the same time. Does Sony need a new PSP, or does the camera and the GAPS add-on? Do those add anything to this thing? I mean, what do they need to
peripherals
do?
Peripherals only splinter your market further.
The last thing they need is to dilute the PSP more.
Yeah, splintering the market is not the way to go.
Scott's over here writing down that you need to lower the price.
They're raising the price, because right now it's $199, but when this bundle comes out, it's going to be $249 again.
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually raising the price of PSP.
Why the hell Lords of Dogtown?
They probably have a lot sitting around.
Is that a Sony movie or
something? It is a Sony Pictures film, yeah.
But transparency is so charming. I love it.
So is it over for PSP? You guys seem
No, it's done. The PSP for now is on the table.
Should it be redesigned or should it be scrapped and started over?
They probably need to go back to the drawing board with it. Period.
And I mean, an interesting way for them to tackle it might be to ditch the UMD, but I think given the games that are out there, that they, like, if they do a redesign, it's got to have a UMD thing in it so you can play your old games. But the logical thing for them to do is, with the flash memory being so cheap now, you can get a gig stick for like $29. You can get a 2 gig stick for well under 100.
8 gig sticks now.
Right. There's 8 gig sticks. They're $200, but still. But what it means is that you can buy a memory stick for $29 that holds as much as a UMD disc. And the data transfer is faster and it won't suck your battery down.
What about exploits?
So they could put a game out. It might be easier and cheaper, and certainly, like, I mean, what we go through with PSP stuff is we don't get code because the guys can't burn their own discs.
Yeah. Right.
They can stick stuff on memory stick. They can offer it up for download.
I mean, UMD almost seems outdated and old and crappy now.
Make it all, like, I mean, I think for the PSP to succeed, move to a digital download service or move to go iTunes with it and make games downloadable and just stick them on memory sticks.
I think that's where we're going.
And what if we springboard off of that and just hypothetically, what if they exploited their connection with Ericsson and made the ultimate phone that the N-Gage wanted to be? A Sony phone, Walkman branded, PSP, you know, super hardcore gaming hardware built into it, mm-hmm. Sony Ericsson phone.
I might be interested.
You might.
Is it just going to be more like PS2 games to play on my phone? Because I'm not.
No, it would need to not. It would need to exploit exactly what you're talking about, built off of the idea of games being downloaded from an iTunes-like store that you accessed through your phone.
Sony's a Japanese company. They have to see the games are succeeding in Japan on DS and think we're doing the wrong thing. Yeah. Like, our games are the wrong games.
When does anyone know anything about the PS1 download stuff they talk about?
I heard October. That's what I heard.
So, about all this stuff about portable gaming, DS and PSP, is portable gaming, is it serious? Is this really serious gaming? And if it isn't, could casual gaming wind up choking out serious, like, more in-depth gaming?
Are we talking about serious gaming as in, like, hardcore gaming?
I think so. Like, the differentiation I think they're trying to draw there is casual games, Luminous, you know, golf,
brain training,
like that, versus, you know, Yakuza or Okami.
The distinction between, like, serious games and casual games is bullshit. I think games is games. You know, sometimes I want a long narrative experience. Sometimes I want to play Text Twist, you know?
What's the difference? I like to have them both. On DS, I play both. Like, I love Brain Age, and I love, you know, like, quick, fun games I can play for 5 minutes, but I also want to play through something like Castlevania.
You were
Final
bored
Fantasy.
By Phoenix Wright, but partly, I think, because of the environment you were playing it in. I play Phoenix Wright as a secondary thing while I'm doing something else. Like, if my wife's watching TV and I'm not really watching and I just want to do something, it's almost like flicking through a magazine. It's like, it's one of, and like, the DS is really good at these sort of like distracting you experiences, which is kind of cool, and you're getting something out of it, and you remember it, and you know, there's enough coming through on it that you can hold a conversation about it, and it's interesting, and that's a sort of casual game, and it's just mildly entertaining you for a period of time, you know? And I think they are just as important as you guys slogging it through Final Fantasy XII, which for me right now, I don't think I'm ever going to be in a position where I'm able to do that.
And I think casual games appeal to the demographics that never are going to play the serious games. And if you can get them to play a DS with those games, then more power to you.
I mean, yeah, and then they might hear that another game that's a bit more involved. I mean, like, casual games, in people treat them like they're a different industry, but they're not. They're, you know...
We all like casual games.
They're the spliff to Final Fantasy's crack, you know?
Oh, so they're the gateway drug.
They are.
Nice. I was gatewayed in off Bejeweled. I got hooked.
But that's what it's doing, and that's what I think we're finding is really interesting about what's happening on Xbox Live. It's what's happening on some of the handheld stuff, with, particularly on the DS, where people are trying Sudoku and going, you know, this thing could do so much more. And like, I've heard it has another thing. Oh, I can raise a dog on it. That's really interesting. And what else can I do on it? And then you suddenly you're under like
and a Wii is definitely all about the casual games, which is a new thing. Right. It's a home console dedicated to casual games.
Mm-hmm.
That's Undiscovered Country.
So it's all a broad spectrum. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about serious or not serious. Just
open your heart to everything.
Cool. So what space is there any space for 2D games anymore? Because with all the new innovations in hardware, it seems like they'd be able to do a lot of really, really fantastic-looking 2D games. But will they, and is it relevant?
I would kill for them to make really good-looking 2D games.
But what's the chance of them doing it?
I don't see the distinction. Why is there a distinction between 2D, 3D? Surely it should be whatever is appropriate. It's like saying, should people do a cartoon or a live-action movie? It's like, it's whatever the experience requires, right?
I mean, that's a very artistic way of looking at it.
So should Phoenix Wright be in 3D because... You know, should Castle Crashers be 3D? No, because it's the design of it is the game needs to be that.
Should Castlevania be 2D?
Right.
Probably. And like, I've been arguing, we hear that Street Fighter 4 is finally happening next year. It's in the new EGM and the rumor mill. We hear it's really happening. And I'm a huge Street Fighter fan, and it better be 2D. It can have 3D graphics, but the gameplay needs to be 2D because Street Fighter gameplay works best in 2D, and there's no way to make it work well in 3D. They've tried it. So like, in that instance, like, you can have 3D graphics, but the gameplay should be 2D. And I think the gameplay should determine, you know, what...
The majority of the best experiences on DS are 2D.
Yeah. I mean, Super Mario...
Trauma Center, which, by the way, I now hate.
It's so hard. That game is so fucking hard.
It gets to a point with that game time.
And you're killing people. You feel really bad about it.
You're killing people, and then people are abusing... I mean, the game just, like, abuses you constantly.
Well, if you kill people, you ought to be abused.
The good news is the Wii one apparently much easier.
Oh, good.
That's what they told us.
So I think a lot of the argument about 3D versus 2D goes back to the whole to the first era of PlayStation, where Sony was really pushing developers to, you know, they were red lighting anything that was 2D. They were saying, you know what?
That was just a sort of myopic, technical driven like outlet.
But I think we're still living in like the backwash from that, where people are still think that, oh, big hardware 3D games, 2D's out of date. And that's why we don't see big developers working on 2D
stuff.
Look
at what the art needs to be, and if the art works flat or whatever. I was really pleased the other day when seeing screenshots of the Family Guy game and the fact that it is cel-shaded and they didn't try to do some crazy, like, you know, when they did some of the Simpsons games that were all 3D? It was like, I mean, the Family Guy game, I would have settled for that as a 2D game.
But, you know, I think the people are making the right decisions. Look at Killzone Liberation. They decided this wouldn't work well in 3D on PSP, and Sony's like, let's make a 2D. Or Nintendo, instead of making another 3D Mario, they made New Super Mario Bros. 2D, and it's a huge success, and everybody loves it. You know, so, like, I think companies are making the right decisions. It isn't like 2D's dead, and people are just overreacting. It
tends to be a bit of a dumb fanboy question, to be honest.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. John calling out the dumb fanboys. So next gen, maybe people are thinking in more open terms. Molly New at Leipzig certainly was thinking in more open terms, right? He brought the subject of combat. He talked about whether or not combat required things like hit points, life bars, and, you know, weaponry where you could get hit with a sword 3 or 4 times. He did that deal where he showed off, like, you know, he talked about Kill Bill, each strike being a kill. So can one button contextual combat work?
Probably not.
Why not?
Does it sound fun?
I don't know. You saw.
Does it sound challenging?
Did you see Molly News presentation?
No, I was actually at a different presentation. That was Matt Leone and Sam were there. But what he was talking about in that particular case was one of the things he was talking about was like the gesturing. He was talking about gesturing without obviously talking about the Wii. But can it work? I don't know that it, like Shane said, I don't know that it would be fun.
Or challenge. I mean, with the Wii maybe, but like with a controller, a remote controller using one button, that doesn't sound fun.
Like, well, I mean, I can't even really envision what Molyneux's after. Like, I just see a series of, like, quick time events, like Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, it's almost like you're just perpetuating the action as opposed to making a decision. It's like, okay, if I'm standing next to you, I'm going to do this. But if I'm standing 2 feet further away, then the action is different. But the interaction is, you know, it's like you're not, it like it's removing some of the decision making out of it, right?
And Molyneux talks a big game, and he rarely, if ever, delivers.
Ooh.
Just putting it out there.
You didn't like Fable.
Well, I like what he promised, but what he delivered wasn't what he promised.
This has been a problem with Peter for years, though. I mean, he has these grand ideas. He is a visionary, and you talk to a lot of producers, and you know they say that the development process, ultimately, the producer's job is to manage compromise, because you only have so much time and so much money, and you end up the original vision which you presented, like, you can't do that anymore, you can't do that, that's too much, that's going to take too much time to develop, you can't do that, and you end up with something that's... And this is what Fable was. It was a bit of a shadow of the original idea.
Right. You cut away everything that was hard to do, and you end up with, like, something simple.
Yeah. So then address it in a visionary sense. Why do we need life bars? Why do we need hip points?
I agree with all that stuff. And I think the people that have done stuff where they've removed... I thought one of the most interesting things about The Getaway was everything was... The graphics were good enough that you could visually represent everything that you needed to know about the state of your character's health and his behavior and... You know, you didn't need a health bar to say that he was fucked up. You could see it. He was dragging his feet and bleeding on the floor. And
how much more intense would it be if you got hit with a sword and it freaking killed you rather than, you know, having people trading blows back and forth?
How fun is it to die in one hit? Not very.
I don't remember where it was, but I talked with someone about how one-hit kills in games are just not fun. It was the Crysis guys we were talking with. I was talking with Baron about it at Leipzig, and he was talking about how when they were tuning the difficulty for Crysis, one of the things that they implemented was a tech that they're calling ambient combat, which is like, on lower difficulty levels, what changes is the guys who would otherwise be aiming at you at the highest difficulty level are now aiming, like, in your general direction. And the reason why was because what they didn't want Crysis to evolve into as a first-person shooter is a game where you, like, walk into an area of hostiles and then... A guy headshots you and you die, because then you're learning the game.
Halo and Legendary says hello.
But, but you're learning the game punitively, and that's how you're being trained to play the game. And they're like, that's not what we want to do. And my first thought when he said that was Halo 2 Legendary.
What you might want to do, I guess, if you're a game designer, is borrow from another popular game. So this was kind of John's thing about plagiarism in games. Saints Row is just a technical knockoff of Grand Theft Auto. So why? Where's the backlash? Why isn't there any backlash?
I mean, Saints Row is just the latest example, but you look in most forms of entertainment, and when something is copied, there was the reality show that there was the sort of accused of being a knockoff. There was the stuff back in April with that 19-year-old girl that wrote the book that was the, I can't remember what she'd knocked off, Sloppy Firsts and Second Helping, whatever it was called. And then you see it in the movie business, but it doesn't even really get called out. There was like Bugs Life and Ants, and then Madagascar and the Wild, and I mean, it happens a lot.
It does.
But it happens, it seems to happen the most in video games.
Well, and the thing with games interesting is if you're a clone, but you make it to a market before the thing you're cloning does, then you kind of get treated differently. And that's what's happening with Saints Row. If there was a new GTA already out on Xbox 360, people might be treating this game a little differently, don't you think?
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah. Because they would have been more called out for.
Yeah, I mean, direct comparisons would have been there. Like, well, this doesn't have motorcycles, this doesn't have planes, why not? You know, that's the kind of thing people are talking about. But like, well, it's the only one on the system, so it'd be nice.
And I think that's also kind of another thing we could take Saints, not to take Saints Row specifically to task, but I think that's one of the things you look for in games that take an idea from another game is taking that idea, but then bringing something else to it, being a creative design.
Having a twist, having your own point of view, and people saying, well, maybe Saints Row doesn't have that.
The twists and stuff tend to pop up everywhere. You know, there's like, you know, the big scene in... I heard recently that there's a game coming up that rips off the scene from Quake 4, you know? Like the one scene everyone remembers in Quake 4. The big transition that was supposed to be the shock. There's another shooter coming up that does exactly that. And it's like...
Which Prey did as well.
Prey did it too.
Yeah, and Prey does it, yeah. And it's like, you know, there's all these like... There seems to be a limited pot of ideas. And it doesn't get called out as much as you would expect.
Yeah, creativity... I mean, I value creativity really intensely in my reviews. And people think, well, we shouldn't do that so much. But me personally, I love when games do things I haven't seen before. And very, very few games do that.
Yeah.
How much of this comes about because... A lot of attention is played to focus groups and, you know, public opinion of what needs to be. Like, everyone loves Grand Theft. Let's build a Grand Theft.
Well, that's the way the industry works.
I mean, one of the criticisms of the criticism of of Saints Row was that...
Some meta shit right there.
Yeah. You were focusing too much on how alike GTA it is. But I think it's really relevant that...
Yeah, like the PR is like, we don't want you to mention Grand Theft Auto.
Right, but clearly,
are you high?
So this was, I mean, like the producer is some like 50-year-old French guy in Illinois or whatever, and it's like it's clearly was a GTA. They took GTA and deconstructed it for 360. I mean, it's there's so much about it that's similar, and it's not alone. It's just the latest one.
So exactly how many, then, of these open sandbox games, these Grand Thefts, do we need? And what does GTA 4 need to do, if we want to speculate about it a little? What does it need to be do to be Grand Theft Auto 4?
Are you talking about sandbox games in general, or
urban ones?
The GTA,
the GTA style. How many more? How many of these open sandbox urban games do we need?
Well, until people stop buying them, people are going to keep making them.
I think what we're going to see from GTA is a lot more sort of detail and depth to it. I think, you know, I mean, one of the things that Saints Row did do well was, you know, the transition from exterior to interior, and the fact that you could go into more buildings, and
right.
There was stuff going on inside buildings as well. There's like, you walk into a nightclub and there's tons of people dancing, and there's scenes going on that are triggered by you walking through the door, and there's no load. I think GTA, you'll see a lot more of that kind of stuff.
I mean, what I want from GTA is different ways to interact with the world besides just like driving from place to place and delivering things. And I want the game not to be about how long can I go before the cops stop me? Because that's the way a lot of people play GTA. They don't actually go through the missions. They're just like, oh, you know, how much can I fuck around until someone stops me? Like, mm-hmm. I want there to be different things to do in the world besides shooting people and racing.
There's some of the Oblivion sort of sandboxy stuff needs to work its way into the into the GTA type experiences, where I can really exist as, you know, in a certain way in this world.
You talk about a technical thing that Saints Row did, but for me, the big thing about Grand Theft has been, you know, they established in Grand Theft Auto 3 that they could do this big world. In 2, you know, or in Vice City, they came back with awesome setting and scene, pulling, you know, the whole 80s vibe in there. And how,
you know, more humor, more characters.
More humor, more character. They really showed how much they could flesh that out. And then in 3, they made the central character really something.
You mean San Andreas, not 3.
San Andreas, right. In San Andreas, they made CJ something special. I mean, CJ is an amazingly solid character.
And the
character.
Game world was much larger, too. So they have made big leaps.
Much larger, like three whole cities.
Well, and I
cities.
Think we all expect, if anybody is going to push the genre forward, it is Rockstar, and they are going to do it, and they have huge expectations to live up to, but I think they can do it.
I think so, too. I think when they come back, they won't come back with, you can walk into buildings. You know, you can,
right.
You can, it'll be something.
No, it's going to be the choices that you make and the things that you can do when you're in there, and the fact that the world isn't just a shell anymore. It's there's so much depth to it and so much content.
Well, another thing
to
they
it.
Can do is no one's really done is like MMO or something more co-op, something real meaty online, not just death
APB
match. Something.
I don't know. I think that what you said about Bully being like an indication is really big, because I could see them doing a lot of that moral integrity part.
Yep.
and how you live your life in GTA.
The difference
4.
Between GTA 3, where the character didn't speak, to Vice City, where it's to CJ, where you really were making choices that were affecting how you felt about CJ.
Oh yeah, like you even went and worked out. You would actually go and work out.
Well, I gotta get this in here. The ultimate thing they could do to GTA. Is make the combat good. I know that's a dream, the impossible dream, that no one can make a game with good combat, but maybe it could happen.
All right, so here's that one I tried to bring up earlier. PS2, Guitar Hero 2 song list.
It's awesome.
What do you think?
Well, you know, there's some unique choices, but a lot of really good games. A lot of really, really good songs here that are exciting.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, the fact they have a Spinal Tap song, that's brilliant. Spinal Tap.
I was just really, 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 really wanted a Tenacious D song. I really.
Well, this isn't everything.
No, I know there's more.
But, yeah, I don't know about that.
Rattle some off for people that haven't seen it yet.
We got Heart-Shaped Box by Nirvana. We got.
Is that the best Nirvana song you
It's a
pick?
Good Nirvana song. We got Message in a Bottle by The Police, Surrender by Cheap Trick, Crazy on You by Heart, Freebird, Miserloo by Dick Dale. That's like the Pulp Fiction song. Lamb of God, Laid to Rest, Alice in Chains, Them Bones, War Pigs, Black Sabbath. Just like Sweet Child of Mine, You Really Got Me.
Sweet Child of Mine is awesome to watch Skip and Garnet play.
So as much as Skip and I love that game, and as much as I love that game, I got to say, the song list so far leaving me kind of flat.
Really?
Yeah, it's really leaving me flat, because it's got a lot of, you know, alternative kind of music, which I guess is cool, but like one of the things that you would...
You want more Kelly Clarkson?
I think he wants more classic rock.
No, I want more sing-alongs. I want more of the games everybody knows that are anthem rock. That
you're saying Sweet Child of Mine and Freebird.
A Madhouse by Anthrax, Shout the Devil, Motley Crue.
I'm saying that when you put Nirvana on there and you pick Heart-Shaped Box over, what would you have put on there?
Smells Like Teen
Spirit. Right? Anything else off of Nevermind? I mean, come on.
Rape Me, that's a good song.
Stone Temple Pilots, and
that's
it's
a good song.
Yeah, but
it's
like,
an okay
it's
song.
Not,
but it's not
a love song.
I would have rather that Interstate
exactly.
Love song.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, and that's how I felt about the track list, too. It's like,
a lot of artists that you were like, yes, and then you look at the song and you're like, ooh, I would pick something. Huh? I just would have picked something else.
And where, by the way, where's the equivalent on this set of Boston's More Than a Feeling? Where's the you put it in and just freaking go?
You wanted some more Chicago, maybe, or
God, dude,
you're comparing
troll.
Boston and Chicago. That's so trollish.
They're good cities.
Nice.
I think Sweet Child of Mine is going to be that. But then, I mean, there's some classic stuff on here. There's some really contemporary stuff. There's an Avenged Sevenfold track on here. There's a, you know, what are you pointing to?
Oh, I'm just looking. I was pushing on the page so I could see it. I think some of the stuff that you've seen already is cool. Like, so
it's got Tonight I'm Gonna Rock You Tonight on it. I mean, what more could you possibly want?
So I think choices like that are really
cool.
You
would have rather had Big Bottom.
I want Jesse's Girl. I want Motorin. Sister Christian.
Sister Christian.
That's what I want.
I wouldn't have minded some Queen coming back. I wouldn't have minded.
I think there's some good stuff in here that is like, you know, can be complex on hard and will, like, you know, you can sling the guitar and feel like you're playing something.
And bear in mind, this is not the full list.
Yeah, I know it's not the full list. I am cool with it not being the full list. I'm just... still surprised.
Did we post
no poison. Where's my poison?
But just for people, post the list anywhere online?
I don't know if we have. It's on the forums. We should.
It just the first little assholes just got their magazine.
One up should be doing story.
Yeah. One up's gonna put the list up.
Yeah. So,
all right. Record for the most Xbox Live downloads on one day on day one is Texas Hold'em Poker.
You know why? Because it's free. And I'm pissed because I was in Germany, so I didn't get to download it for free. So now it's like you go to Click Texas Hold'em, and it's whatever, however many points I'm not spending on it. Screw you.
All right, so what does that say about the Xbox 360, and is it fulfilling the something for everyone original pitch?
I think it says people like things that are free, so they're going to love Sony and Nintendo's online plans.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Pin drop.
I don't really have anything else to say. I do think that you're right about people liking stuff that's free, but I whatever.
I mean, that was an easy one. Yeah, it was free for 2 days. Of course, a lot of people downloaded it. Surprise.
That's a model that they should use, though.
No, I do wish that you could bet your points. Not your gamer cred, not your gamer score, but the points you buy to buy games. It'd be awesome if you could gamble that.
Wow, real money.
How cool would that be? That'd be cool.
Like the
there's that SkillGround beta that we put the story up this week.
Totally cool.
Betting money in skill-based gaming where you, like, you know, you put money into a pot and you walk away with it.
I think it's cool.
I wish that you could do that on Xbox Live. That'd be awesome. See?
All right, I'm wrapping up the segment with a special question from the new suggestions thread, part two, that's sticky at the top of the boards, which is... what's your biggest gaming memory?
Oh, boy.
This is going to take a while and be really gay.
All right. Well, then I'll let you start then. What's your biggest gaming memory?
Probably the day I beat The Legend of Zelda. I remember, like, I had, like, a cosmic convergence of happiness, and it was, like, it changed my life. That game was amazing. I was a little kid, and I remember that night, like, thinking about how much I loved the game and how it was changing my life. How gay is that?
That's pretty gay.
That was pretty gay.
I remember wanting Zelda 2: The Adventures of Link really badly when it came out, and for whatever reason, maybe my parents sucked at shopping.
No, there was a chip shortage.
I couldn't get it. So instead, I got Hudson's Adventure Island.
It's a good game, but it's not Zelda 2.
It's not Zelda 2. It's definitely not Zelda 2.
Shane is like on Mr. Good Guy today. It was like, oh, that's all right. That's a good game. It's like, Nintendo.
Is your best gaming memory a disappointment?
No.
that explains a lot.
No, probably my like all-time favorite gaming memory was probably completing Mario 3.
I made my mom come in and watch the ending because I thought she cared. I was like 11. She didn't care at all.
I had my dad do the same thing. I was like, Dad, watch.
My mom's like, I don't care.
He was like, you're 22.
I guess I should have been thinking about this earlier. What are you going with, John?
I don't know. I remember I had some really early stuff. So I had something that was basically a variation of a Pong machine. I can remember that having a big impact. But then what was called the Odyssey 2 here? It was called the Philips G7000 in Europe. And it was, you know, it had the analog sticks and the keyboard. I can remember my dad bringing that home, and there was a Pac-Man knockoff on it called Munchkin.
I played CC Munchkin, maybe?
Something like that.
I played it, yeah.
And the difference was that the dots moved and you had to chase them.
Yeah.
And that was just like, oh my God.
I remember playing that. Unbelievable. I remember that too.
I have like a weird one, which is like this whole...
You were in college when Pong came out, right?
That was really weird when... I'm so over it. Whatever. You know, hey, by the way, 4 days, my birthday.
Nice.
I'm gonna be 150.
Nice.
It's awesome, by the way.
Congratulations.
You're holding up really well.
I know. It's great. It's
that formaldehyde smell's following you around a little, but
it's the gin and tonics. Anyway, I remember beating Diablo 2 the third time through on hell difficulty, and realizing A, how cool it was, and B, how much time I'd spent on it.
You had to beat it three times to realize it was cool.
No.
It was a lot of clicking.
And then that was like it. It was like suddenly like a switch had turned, and I was like, you know what? I played this game. And that was it. And I just put it down. It was so bizarre.
I'm thinking about it. There's so many.
There are so many.
Yeah, we can do a whole show. First time I saw Ultima Underworld.
When I bought a Sega Saturn, I took it home. I played Panzer Dragoon. It looked so good. I had to turn it off. I was like, that looks so good. I can't handle it.
I was like that.
That's the gayest you know, thing
I've
ever
heard. No, but I was like that with the original Ridge Racer on PlayStation. Yeah. I remember getting the PlayStation home, putting it on
shit.
And thinking, it's never going to get any better than this.
I just remember my mom vacuuming up my Mega Man 2 password shit.
Oh!
You never recover from something like that. You never recover.
And being a Final Fantasy
geek. Have you spoken
geek,
to her since?
I mean, hell, barely. I could just rattle off ones just
off
Final Fantasy.
We could do a whole show on this.
I pointed it out when I forgot her birthday.
I mean, like the first time you come out in Final Fantasy VII and realize how big the overworld is.
Oh, I remember that too, yeah.
You so don't.
No, I do. I was 13 or something then. I wasn't in my 20s.
I was in college.
I was 57 by then.
Yeah, I was in college. Am I that old?
You were 13 when Final Fantasy VII came out?
In 1997?
Oh, it was no, I was like 16 then. Oh,
okay.
I thought it was like 93.
All right, that's enough of that.
I think we should do this segment more next, you guys.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be a whole segment.
If you like it, let us know.
Yeah, sounds good. And we'll be back in a minute with the News Blast, which Luke has quite a ream of paper there, so we'll head through it as quick as possible.
And welcome to the 1UP Radio Network. If you know the name of the podcast you'd like to hear, press 1 now. You have selected Radio PM, starring the editors of the official U.S. PlayStation magazine. To download an episode at radiopm.1up.com, press 1 now. To listen to a promo, press 2 now. In a world ripped apart by war, only one magazine.
Want to know what's new now? Then join Jim Lauterbach and Patrick Norton as they tackle the latest technology news. They'll keep you informed with their weekly What's New Now podcast. Just go to whatsnewnow.com and subscribe, or subscribe through iTunes.
Listening to 1UP Yours, part of the 1UP Radio Network.
All right, we're back and ready for some news with Luke, who's going to give you some tidbits that you're not going to believe now, but he'll be proven correct in a couple of 3 weeks.
What you got, Luke?
Deja vu, total. Sony, Shane, your boys.
I love them.
You love them. You like it. You like that.
Everyone likes it.
Why can't they get these Blu-ray lasers done?
Well, they got to make PS3s out of them.
Yeah, but what about all
they're making PS3s out of lasers?
They are.
Yes, and it has lasers, but they're not working. The yield sucks. So Sony, what they're doing is they're redirecting all the shipments of Blu-ray lasers, the little laser inside that makes the pretty pictures that don't play DVDs, Garnet.
These are the lasers that are in the PS3s that they've not announced that they've started making.
Yeah, the lasers that they're not confirming the production of, but when they're ready to confirm that production, they're suspending shipments of these lasers to anything that's not a PS3 so they can get 4 million PS3s on store shelves by the end of 2006, which we just checked, we looked, we're driving, and the road is paved with virgin blood, and we know that means we're on our way to Fantasyland.
That blog that we read about, you know, next generation HD DVD versus Blu-ray really made sense about Blu-ray coming out before it was ready, you know, with the whole deal.
What blog was that?
Digital Bits. Where we were.
And they were talking about how, you know, like right now the Blu-ray can't get the 50 gig drives, or they can't get the 50 gig support to work, and it's not a matter of the drive or the technology. It's that they never quite got through that beta period, so they're going to have to, even the first $1,000 player is going to need a firmware update before it's able to play 50 gig discs.
And I mean, the first generation Sony hardware has such an excellent track record anyway, that I think that you're going to see a lot of success from early adopters. I'm excited. I can't wait.
It's not easy to be an industry leader. That's all I'm saying.
Just ask the guys who are making HD DVDs.
I'm glad that
you like go like hard for HD DVD today.
He said to me on IM yesterday. He's like, if that HD DVD add-on for the 360 is less than $200, I'm gonna get one.
Right. I did say that. I did say
did
that.
He said I'ma get one.
No, I was a little Luke doing Garnet.
Oh, okay.
I love it when you do me, baby.
God Christ.
When are you going to shave?
Does it chaff when he does you?
Oh, God.
Wow.
A little lotion.
Back to
sorry.
Your news story, though.
Yeah. One thing I want to say when I was joking about Sony's first generation hardware issues, I want to point out that I heard, and I'm trying to confirm it with Microsoft, but like Microsoft now might be charging you shipping and handling for your 360, like when you get it fixed.
When it breaks.
Yeah, when it breaks.
When it breaks.
Yeah, before they had a deal with the shipping and handling companies was handled by a third party. And now Microsoft had a deal where they paid that third party for the shipping and it was all taken care of. Well, that deal allegedly expired like today. And so a friend of mine was going to send his 360 and he's like, yeah, they told me I had to pay shipping and handling. And I said, what? No, you don't.
I'm curious. Does everybody at this table know somebody whose Xbox 360 is broken?
Yeah.
I do.
I had one that broke.
But anyway, only
through secondhand, actually. Okay. I don't have someone who like walked to me and said, oh, man, the red light's on.
Wasn't there some story recently about the rate at which they broke? There was like
yes, there was. So it came out of EA, right?
Yeah, an EA employee.
Oh, right. And then there was this sort of like Microsoft witch hunt to find out where it came from, right?
Yeah, and that person is no longer with us.
Yeah, he's no longer alive.
Yeah, he's done. But no, to stay on task though, I'm trying to figure out, and I've had Microsoft like looking into it for the last 2 days, and they're like, yeah, we'll probably know the answer tomorrow. But it'll be really interesting if that deal's up and Microsoft's like, yeah, we're not really going to renew that. You can pay to fix your system. You can at least pay the shipping and handling.
That was one of the things.
It's like an 80-ton box.
Well, that was one of the things they always did that was really, you know, cool of them. They sent out a box with, like, you know, the compressed air bag that you just, you know, you dropped your thing in, pulled the tab on the box, and put the tape on, and boom, you're done.
Yeah, they made it extremely easy for them to fix your broken hardware. So Tecmo is going to support the Virtual Console.
Awesome.
Which is good news, right? Tecmo Bowl, please?
The old Ninja Gaiden.
The old Ninja Gaiden.
Rygar. Tecmo Knight.
In the Tecmo Bowl, I mean, Tecmo Bowl to me is still the football game that needs to be coming out every year. Mm-hmm. I need a Tecmo Bowl. And I only need it to have 4 plays. And I need to get a sack if I pick the right play. And I think that's Tecmo Bowl.
I think this
1-4 is awesome.
I think this announcement
1/4 of the time, fun.
That's enough of you. The announcement of the support for Virtual Console is really good, and I think it means we're going to see a lot of third-party games from the get-go on Wii Virtual Console.
Which is great, because there won't be a lot of launch games.
Yeah, the launch lineup for the Wii, no matter how you feel about Nintendo and the Wii, is admittedly kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, you're right. You know, shipping with probably Game of the Year, that's really underwhelming.
Oh, Game of the Year that I can play on my GameCube. And enjoy it more. I'm excited.
Actually, you could just hook the GameCube controller up to the Wii and get the same experience.
You can't. Oh, God.
Well, that's right.
Oh, bless you, Garnet.
Oh, I made a mistake. Wait.
And you're right.
Oh, shock.
And both of you have played Zelda since it has the new control scheme, so you know exactly what it's about. No, wait. You play shit out of your ass because you're stupid.
Oh, yeah. Wait. It's the Wii controller. I'd rather play the GameCube. Wavebird, best controller last gen.
On Zelda, I would be pulling it. I haven't played
it. Wavebird's going to work with the Wii, right? Was there a story about that this week?
I don't know. That whole thing was really confusing to me. The whole, like, it's going to work with the Wii, it's not going to work with Zelda. Like, that whole thing that Garnet was just talking about, I'm not really clear on what it means.
Must be getting old, too. It's all right, Luke. Don't worry about it.
I am old. So EA had a big week this week because of Madden, right, Garnet?
$100 million.
Where's that PR you got? Ugh.
And it is totally PR, isn't it? It's like just like them to be beating it. It's kind of funny that they would draw attention to the fact that they made a fuck ton of money off of owning the NFL and not letting anyone else compete with them. Wow, surprise.
What's up with, where's my antitrust lawsuit?
We made $100 million week one. $100 million. Yeah, you're the only game in town.
Yep.
But I thought the 2K, like the murmurs
the little quiet fart noises
next year
of a new football game? Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Next year. We'll be hearing.
This year, Madden or nothing.
But if 2K does that whole thing right, it'll be like we were talking about. It'll be like winning 11, where, you know, you'll have like fan community building out the team names, building out the characters, building out all the uniforms. That they'll have competition without having to pay the licensing rights. This could be like a brilliant move for them.
If they do go that way and it does do the winning 11 thing, I mean, it will hopefully push them the way that winning 11 is pushing FIFA and is making them think about control and the pace of the game. And I mean, because they've always focused on, you know, all the FIFAs to get more and more beautiful and more advanced, whereas what the Konami guys were doing was making the ball control better and the animation system more along the lines of what we talked about last week with NBA Live, where the transitional animations make it feel more natural and they slowed the pace down so you actually felt like you were controlling the ball. And, you know, meanwhile, Madden's going off in this, what else can we do to make it like a, I don't know, role-playing game?
You know, EA, by the way, EA is bringing in FIFA for us to play on 360 next Thursday, so... You can maybe do a little report on that.
I hope it's better
than
last year.
Where it'll appear exclusively for 12 months on next-gen platforms. Sort of.
In your...
Ish.
Ish.
I mean,
you were there. What was the buzz?
Well, here's the thing. Like, this is a week. I mean, it's a week old now, so it feels a little dated. And we talked about it on EGM Live, too. But, I mean, we might as well run through it again really quick. Like, this whole announcement, the Konami, EA, Microsoft, like, menage a trois of exclusivity.
Smoke and mirrors.
It's really confusing because, like, Chris Satchel, you know, sat with me last week at Leipzig and was like, it's a 12-month deal. It's a 12-month-long exclusive deal between us and these two companies.
In Europe, it's very important to say also, this doesn't affect America or Japan.
And the thing is, like, they never said that. They never said that at their press conference. It was almost like because that they were in Europe, maybe they just implied, you know, they're like, well, the rest of the world certainly... We'll be paying attention to this. We don't need to specify. We're on location. We're talking about Europe. That's all we mean. But what we talked about was what I think is going to happen is that it will end up being a 12-month-long exclusive, but before that 12 months is up, you'll see it announced and, like, you know, previewed and whatever, like, well before it.
Yeah, like the...
Yeah, we'll all know when it's coming.
The real winning 11 for PS3 will be out in Japan during that time. And it'll probably look awesome. It'd be better than, you know, what's available in Europe for 360.
Boys and girls, say hello to Game Video's Mark McDonald walking in the door to say hello.
He's like shaking his head and saying, no,
it's like,
I'm not
no,
here.
No, I can't talk on the air.
I'm not here.
Come on, the audience loves you, Mark. Say hello, everybody.
Hello.
There he is.
I get a ride.
We're almost done.
Thanks.
We're wrapping it up. So there's a rumor this week, which is actually like an old rumor, that Sony's writing a new PSP for 2007. And the sort of products of the rumor, it sort of just ends up being like, if Garnet, John, Shane, and I sat down to talk about, like, how would we redesign the DS? What would you want in it?
We kind of touched on this earlier.
Yeah.
But I think that information is probably wrong. But what it is just like a slimmed down with built-in memory and a built-in iToy, built-in GPS. And it would be a better PSP, but it's a stopgap. It doesn't solve the problem of the PSP and how it's losing the DS. And, you know, I think
there needs to be more of an iteration on PSP, I think, for them to really do it. I mean,
right. Like you were talking about, you know, what you would, what they
right.
need to
go,
do.
Go memory stick or go just built in memory. I mean, you know,
digital
download.
I can't believe Luke's not like up in arms about this because it sounds almost like the Nintendo hardware revisionist kind of thing. You know, oh, well, we'll make you one and then we'll make you the next one.
Yeah,
we'll
but
make
the
you
thing the good is like. Yeah, but Nintendo does it to make a shitload of money. Sony does it because they're
self-destructive. The flaw,
they're
I mean,
screwed.
One of the several flaws in PSP is UMD. I mean, like, for them to truly iterate to a point where it's what it should be, they need to take the thing out. But there's enough PSPs and enough games out there that they can't bring out another unit and say, oh, by the way, that copy of GTA that you bought that you really love, now you're going to have to do a digital download.
But it's almost reminding me of like N64 that they made this format that they thought was a great idea that everyone's going to adopt, and then it ends up being like a dog and it holds them back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Blu-ray.
Oh. Nice.
Nice. Speaking, I don't know. I don't really have a good transition into a bunch of people quitting working on Duke Nukem Forever. Like 10 years of their life, just done.
You think they were getting paid?
I don't. That's what I was wondering. Like, what is the budget on this game in salaries and like Coca-Cola alone?
Yeah,
because well, I mean,
I've got an opinion on this game. I haven't seen the latest version of it. It might look all right.
You've seen the 7 previous ones,
but I think no matter what happens, that so much has changed in the world of FPSs in the last 10 years that Duke Nukem is so outdated and it's going to be a laughing stock. Because if you look at like what Half-Life did to narrative and to level design and immersion and like. Duke Nukem is going to come out and be the same thing you played 10 years ago with better graphics.
Or it'll go the way of Prey, in which case everything that was done for the last 10 years gets table swiped and someone bangs out another one in a year. Or however long Prey. How long was Prey in development? Not long.
Actually, it was under development for 2 years before they took the wraps off of it.
Really?
So, yeah, it was under development for actually quite a while.
I mean, maybe Broussard has secretly reinvented the thing from scratch a couple of years ago. I mean,
he actually offers some official comment to Shaq News message boards and says that the physics and animation systems, and this is in Duke Nukem Forever, are virtually finished and shippable. It's simply maintenance and polish from here on out. We haven't needed to make substantial changes to those systems in months. Emphasis mine. The changes we have made were made with great effort. Things are never as bleak as they appear, as is often the case when you simply have one side of the story. Do you think he uses this like motivational speech when he's like, guys, it's been 8 years. Look how far we've come. Look at that artwork along the walls. Look at that concept art. That was us 12 years ago. Look where we are now. That shit's at 15 frames per second. And it's looking good.
Look, man, you know what the sad part is I talked to George B. when we did the Prey thing. I did a phone interview with him. And he's actually, when you like talk to him, like especially before the interview, when you're just kind of, you know, rapping and just hanging out, he's a cool guy. And he's a gamer. He has like, at least he expresses genuine, like, intense, super want to make the game right, want to make the game fun, want to do the right things. And I think what happens, you know, I read a rumor like maybe it was in the thread over at Shaq where someone was saying, yeah, the deal is that he's like in there all the day at time driving people fucking nuts with this. Oh, I'm going to add one more stupid comment from Duke here, or I'm going to tweak this level. It's like, you know what? That's one of those hard parts that guys who are really into it have is when do you take a step back and say, you know what, maybe we should finish the game.
But, like, my question is, does anybody want a game where you're, like, a parody of Arnold Schwarzenegger shooting pigs and, like, looking at...
Yeah, I mean, is Duke Nukem as a character even relevant anymore?
It's like, a joke from 1993, and I think people are going to laugh at this shit when it comes out, frankly.
I think I'm going to take the high road and say, I'm going to hold my opinion until I actually see a game. If I see a game, I will play the game and tell you what I think of it, but it's going to face an incredibly hard judge.
To play my own devil's advocate, I was talking the same conversation with Randy Pitchford, the CEO of Gearbox, and he's worked very closely with them in the past, and he says that he really does believe in the project, he believes in George, and he thinks that it will eventually be a good game. And I was like, oh, all right.
I think the best thing from our perspective is that whatever happens, this is a great story.
Yeah.
Like, when you can dig into what happened.
When it's said and done.
When you can do a month-long cover on the last 10 years.
Yeah.
They could make a documentary on this shit. That'd be brilliant.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be fascinating.
I'd buy that. I'd watch that.
If you're one of the guys that quit and want to come talk to us about your experiences and you're allowed to,
hey, we've got a...
Shoot us a note.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
What's the email address we can be reached at?
What's the best one to do? Probably...
Do we have an email?
Like, oneup@ziffdavis.com. Try that one.
OneUpYours is a
different one. I think OneUpYours at Ziff Davis is actually on. We were getting that worked out with tech last week.
This is the last piece of news, and it's news that's really close to my heart. And it's close to my heart because it's really not news, because we've known about it forever and have had it denied forever, but Assassin's Creed is coming to the Xbox 360.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, really. I know. They're going to announce a version, and they probably announced it today. But also, if for whatever reason they didn't, it's in the new EGM.
Also coming to PC.
Yeah, also coming to PC. They confirmed it for us for PC earlier this week. And by then, I mean, we'd seen the early builds of the new EGM. And so I teased Ubisoft PR.
They have builds now?
I don't know. It's like the alpha?
This is an alpha.
That's a gold. It's a gold disc.
Gold master.
Yeah, it's a gold master. And I saw it in there, and I emailed Ubisoft PR, and I was like, I'm really enjoying the new EGM with the Assassin's Creed, the 360 story. I think it's great. Comment?
But they haven't commented on, like, timed exclusivity or when. We don't know.
No, that's the thing. And that's what the announcement will ultimately, hopefully, clear up is, yes, it's coming. It's coming at the same time. It's coming 6 months later. It's coming for November. I don't know.
Where's kept development secret in the last months?
Well, I mean,
several months.
I think Mercenaries 2, 360, Bioshock,
so now your crusade
PS3.
Is over. What are you going to do now?
I'm actually retiring. I don't know. But this was, I mean, I'm really excited for it. I got to check it out last week at Leipzig, and it was worth the wait. Which, by the way, there were a shitload of news outlets reporting with a picture of Claude, who was demoing it with like 360s behind him, being like, "See, it's on 360 all along." And like the 360s in the pictures aren't even on. It's just like, oh, internets, oh boy.
And there you have it, folks. If you have some feedback for Luke on his triumph over Ubisoft in Assassin's Creed, you know where to hit it. Hit him up at boards.oneup.com. And otherwise, we'll be back next week on Friday, as always. Till then, we're out.
This has been One Up Yours, a production of the Civ Davis Game Group and part of the One Up Radio Network. One Up Yours is hosted by Garnet Lee and John Davison, produced by Andrew Pfister and Mike Ng, and is published every Friday afternoon at podcasts.oneup.com and at the iTunes Music Store.
What's up? I'm not in the fucking credits.